Tonight on this very special episode of Tech News Tonight, what has Apple exactly done in 2014? We're going to talk all about it. Tech News Tonight is next.
This is Twit.
This is a special edition of Tech News Tonight, episode 240, recorded Monday, December 1st, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, who recently launched the latest version of their platform, Squarespace 7, which has a completely redesigned interface, integrations with Getty Images and Google Apps, new templates, and an incredible feature called Cover Pages. Try the new Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter the offer code TECHNIGHT at checkout to get 10% off. Hello, everyone. I'm Sarah Lane, and on this special edition of our show, we are talking about Apple, the year of Apple, some of the innovations, the products, the problems that the company faced this year, quite a few of all of those things. And here, live in person, to get right into this topic is our special guest, Jason Snell. Hello, Jason.
Hello. Good to be here.
Of sixcolors.com, where you've been very prolific.
Yeah, it's like those Apple, the Apple rainbow. That's what six colors means.
It's does
the
it?
Original Apple logo was the six-color Apple rainbow.
I'm sure a few people out there were like,
I wonder what it means.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense.
Yeah, when Steve Jobs came back to Apple, apparently, he said there were people there who said, I still bleed in six colors. So they were like the old diehards of...
love it.
And it wasn't a domain name.
Were you squatting it? It was available.
That surprises me with all the Apple fans. But yeah.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Well, you're obviously a frequent guest on MacBreak Weekly. You talk about Apple quite a bit, so you're just the perfect person to have here. So thanks for being on the show.
Absolutely.
So I guess I'll start with a question that I feel like comes up every year. Has Apple reached its peak? You know, a year ago, everyone was asking that, and now Apple's market cap is bigger than it's ever been before. So in terms of money, the company's doing great. What do you think about the company's vision, considering that we've got several different sizes of iPhones now, a few different kinds of iPads to choose from, an Apple Watch that no one's really seen but is obviously a new product category? How do you feel Has it diversified too much?
Well, everybody's been looking for Apple to be at its peak since about 10 years ago.
Right.
So it's like every year we need to do that. We need to have that conversation. But I think this year was really interesting for Apple. This was a year when Apple changed its playbook up a little bit. Like, you know, famously, Steve Jobs told Tim Cook, don't always ask what would I do. You need to do what you think is right for Apple. And this year we saw Apple make changes to the playbook. You mentioned it. There are multiple iPhone sizes now.
Yeah.
The Apple Watch is going to be a new product category. So they're doing some different things than they've done in the past. I think that's a good sign, because I think that shows that Apple is trying to look at the market and make the right decisions based on what's happening today. And one of my big fears for them was that they were going to get too bogged down into like, oh, Steve didn't want to do a bigger iPhone,
right,
so let's never do one. That's forbidden.
Sure.
And they're not doing that.
Yeah, obviously with iOS 8, we saw, you know, finally the addition of third-party keyboards, for example.
Exactly.
That was something that Apple was just staunchly against only a couple years ago. We're not going to have anything at the iOS level be changed by a third-party keyboard. People love them. Well, I do anyway.
Yeah, and the iOS 8 also has extensions built into them. So you've got code from apps executing in other apps, which was a totally like, no way is that ever going to happen in iOS. And, you know, times change. And that's also the case where not only were a lot of those features available on Android, and Apple would say, well, you know, security, this and that. I think philosophically, Apple didn't want to go there. And now they're saying, it's okay if we go there.
Yeah.
And it's okay if our competitors have them. Perhaps that is a sign that people like them and we should do them too. And, you know, again, I think that's a healthy thing. I think it's a good sign that Apple isn't being stubborn and saying, if we didn't do it in the past, we're never going to do it. Because that way lies doom, right? Once you're stuck in the mud like that in the technology business, you're over. And so I like that they're questioning old decisions and making changes.
Absolutely. And there is sometimes a very thin line between being secure and being innovative. And a lot of, you know, Android users might say, we're plenty secure. Apple's just lagging behind. We have all these features that Apple users don't have. A lot of my Android friends are telling me that all the time.
Sure.
To this day. But yes, it is nice to see some innovation, certainly on the software side. On the hardware side, you know, we got new iPads. Obviously, we heard a lot about the Apple Watch. We've seen it somewhat in action. But I would say the biggest products of the year are the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus. 6 Plus is huge. I actually own one, and it took a while.
It is physically huge. It is, not just it's big. It's people are talking about it physically huge.
It's a
huge.
Big physical deal, yes. but the iPhone 6, even so, is quite a bit larger than the 5S, mm-hmm. which many of us, even if we had the newest iPhone available, at one point the 5S was really long, you know,
yeah, right.
compared to its predecessor.
To 4S,
yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. So, or the 5. So, the iPhone 6 Plus, I felt like people wanted to find something wrong with it. They wanted it to be too big. There was bend gate, which really apparently only happened to a handful of people. But you know, the idea right. was, oh, you're going to sit on it and it's so big that it's going to form, you know, under the weight of your body.
Yeah.
But and yes, more iPhone 6s were sold than 6 Pluses, but it seems like it's been a pretty big success for people who really like that bigger form factor.
Yeah, one of the great things about Apple having 5S, 6, and 6 Plus on the market is what Apple's saying is, look, buy what you want. Buy. You've got a choice now.
Right.
And it used to be with the iPhone, you chose what Apple chose for you, and mm-hmm. they were choosing what they thought was the most popular single model. And now they're saying, some people want a bigger phone and other people don't, so we're going to give them both. And I know from talking to some people at Apple that in certain parts of the world, especially in Asia, but there are other markets too, large phones have been very successful. And they're watching. They know what their competitors are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And large phones have been very successful in Asia for a few reasons, including that for a lot of people, it is a status symbol, and the bigger the phone, the better. And then for a lot of people, it's their only computing device. And if you're going to have a single computing device, the extra screen real estate makes a difference. And those are just two of many cultural reasons, market reasons why in certain areas it's going to sell really well. And in other parts of the world, it's a little bit more of a curiosity, but there are always going to be use cases for it. I know a bunch of people who bought the 6 Plus. I think I know more people who bought the 6.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, again, it comes back to the fact that it's Apple saying, look, just because this isn't what everybody wants doesn't mean that there isn't a use for it. And it's an interesting product. It's like halfway between an iPad and an iPhone because the interface is, it's the first iPhone to have some different interface conventions. Like you can turn it on its side and launch apps from there. It's got a keyboard with extra keys on it.
Right.
It's a different kind of product for Apple.
Do you think, you know, and obviously in our line of work, we tend to have more Apple devices than the average person. You know, I've got 2 iPads in my purse right now, and it just, you know, I'm always testing stuff. But I think you hit on an interesting point that for a lot of people, you're just probably going to have one iDevice. You're going to have an iPad or an iPhone or something like that. So you're probably going to want the phone because that's just more of that everyday sort of use case for a lot of people. But if it's larger, then you might miss something like the iPad form factor a lot less.
Right. I think that is one scenario. I do think there are people who are going to have an iPhone and an iPad and a laptop and you know, they're going to replace them at intervals. And that iPad isn't going to get replaced every 2 years. It might be every 4 years or every 5 years. But they may have that. But there are other people for whom, yeah, the smartphone is it. Either they have nothing else mm-hmm. or they have just a computer somewhere at work or at home. And yeah, one of my friends, he wanted the 6 Plus because he wanted the ability when he was at work to have his personal space that he could like take and do his other personal stuff when he was on a break or at lunch or something. And so he wanted the biggest device possible, and that was the 6 Plus. It makes sense for a lot of people. And, you know, and we've known that since the Galaxy Note came out, because
right.
the Galaxy Note came out and it was a surprise. And people are like, oh, look at that giant thing.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that pen. And this is ridiculous. And you could argue that maybe it was ridiculous on some levels, but the fact is it resonated with a certain part of the market. And the 6 Plus is the result, which is Apple saying, we want to go and grab that part of the market that's paying a lot of money for a really big phone. Why isn't it our phone?
Speaking of, well, the opposite of big, the Apple Watch, which is not available yet, but was introduced earlier this year
yeah.
at the iPhone event. Was it the iPhone event or the iPad event?
It was at the iPhone event.
It was at the iPhone event.
It was a big day.
Yes, it was. And it was something that, you know, a wearable device coming from Apple had been rumored for some time. But even the fact that it was called the Apple Watch was nobody really knew that ahead of time. There, you know, as far as the Apple rumor mill, it was at least kept pretty tightly under wraps. But we've seen a lot about how it's supposed to work. Developers are already working on how to integrate their apps between iOS and the Apple Watch. What do you think, as a new product category, how this is going to sell, knowing that at a base model, it's over $300 and may actually be as much as 6,000.
I think it will sell well because I think Apple doesn't go into a new market like this without thinking that there's a lot of potential. Apple doesn't want to make a curiosity product. They view this as a huge strategic product for them. I think they are selling into the market of iPhone users, and there are lots of those out there. And $350, if they can make the case that this has a whole bunch of features that are going to make your life better by working together with your iPhone, I think they can make that case. The $6,000 model, I mean, there's this whole other thing that's happening here, which is Apple consulting with the fashion industry. And that's a fascinating, weird, new thing. And who knows, tech is fashion. If anybody's going to do that it right, it's Apple. But still, is anybody going to really do it right? That, I think, is a bigger question mark about how they're going to approach the super luxury market. But, you know, I think it will sell well. It's very hard to guess how well. It is a new category. It's not going to be anybody who thinks it's going to be like iPhone sales level. Well, it's certainly not going to be that. Smartphones are in a category by themselves. But I think that Apple wouldn't come out with it if it didn't think it has a really good chance of selling well, because they would be wasting a lot of effort on a product like this if it wasn't going to sell.
Even though for a variety of activities, you would still need your iPhone to be in the vicinity of the watch. Because that's one of the things I say, you know, I want it to be able to stand alone.
I know. At first, it's going to be much more of an iPhone accessory.
Right.
Although it will be able to do some things like do the physical, like the, you know, sensor tracking of your heartbeat and things like that.
Yeah.
And apparently you can even load music and stuff onto it separate from your iPhone, which is kind of weird, but apparently that's possible. But like the initial third-party apps aren't really going to be apps. They're going to be apps on your phone that talk to the watch and show things on the watch, so the phone has to be there. And there's no GPS in it. So I'm pretty sure that it's going to be a year or two before it's a much more of a standalone device. But, you know, the original iPhone made a lot of compromises too, and it didn't do a whole lot. And what it did do, it did really well. And I think that's good. I think one of my concerns about the Apple Watch is that at that event, Apple said, look what it does. It does a billion different things. Let me show you all of them. And that's a little worrisome, because what you really want this product to do is do what it does really well. So, you know, tying it to the iPhone, I think, is probably okay in the short term.
Sure.
But it is a little bit, I agree with you, it's a little worrisome in the long term. Like, if I want to use it when I'm running, it doesn't, you know, the Microsoft Band has a GPS built into it, but the Apple Watch won't.
Then again, you could say, back in the early days of the App Store, there were just a few good apps, and now there are many, many millions of them. So it was an ecosystem that matured because the product was there, and developers saw interesting opportunities. So
yeah, and this is a much better story for developers. The developers have the first version of WatchKit now that will let them project things from out of their iPhone apps onto the watch. And Apple has said there'll be a full watch app development kit later in 2015. So they're going to get. There's going to be third-party stuff on the watch way sooner than there was ever third-party stuff on the iPhone.
We are going to talk much more about Apple in just a couple minutes, including Apple Pay and how Tim Cook is doing as the leader of One Infinite Loop in Cupertino. But first, let's take a moment to thank Squarespace.com for sponsoring this episode of TN2. Squarespace, we love them. They just launched their latest version of the platform, too. So if you're not familiar with Squarespace, or you've used it in the past, Squarespace 7 is a completely redesigned interface that makes it easy to create your own professional website, and it's better than ever. They're always improving their platform. They listen to user feedback, and they want it to be as easy as possible for you to put something together that's very pro. Squarespace 7 has easier editing. You can live edit all on one screen. Used to be you had to toggle, not anymore, between screens. You can preview your designs in device mode. We're talking about lots of different sizes of devices. You can see how your site is going to look on a large desktop computer or tablets or a variety of mobile sizes. You have instant access to professional stock photography coming from Getty. They've got wonderful images at Getty, and Squarespace now allows direct purchases inside Squarespace from Getty Images. $10 a pop for your site comes really in handy when you need a beautiful image that you just don't have on hand and you probably never will. You have instant branded email set up with Google Apps as well, so you can have branded email for your small business or even just for yourself automatically set up up when you sign up for your Squarespace account. And then there are all the templates. They've really gone crazy with templates that are designed for specific professions. Maybe you're a chef. Maybe you're an artist. We saw some artist templates a minute ago. There are lots of different industries that you might be in, and your website kind of needs to reflect that. So Squarespace has designed category-specific templates that cater to the site requirements for a variety of industry groups. Now, it's very easy to use, but hey, sometimes we all need a little bit of help. Squarespace has live chat and email support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I have personally had a really great time talking to a lot of their support techs who were able to not only answer me quickly, but be very helpful about it. And self-help articles, if you kind of just like to learn on your own speed, and video workshops to browse at your leisure. I remember watching one on DNS settings at one point, and actually I got what I wanted out of it. Starts at just $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year, and hosting is included. Did I mention that? Squarespace takes care of hosting, and you don't even have to. Start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website. You got 2 weeks. You can put something really amazing up. When you decide to sign up for an account, make sure to use the offer code TECHNIGHT. That's TECHNIGHT, and you'll get 10% off, and you can show your support for us here at TN2. To begin using Squarespace 7, existing customers, just go to the Settings tab and activate all those new features. So if you're already using Squarespace, it's like you've got a whole new tool at your fingertips. Thanks to Squarespace for their support of Tech News Tonight. Squarespace, start here and go anywhere. All right, Jason, we're here with Jason Snell of sixcolors.com. Thanks for being with us. I mentioned before the break that Apple Pay was new in 2014. I have used it several times at Whole Foods, mm-hmm. which is my closest grocery store that I frequent. And the first time really kind of did feel like magic, I have to say. But it uses NFC. It's not a new technology.
Not a new technology.
Google Wallet people, you know, were sort of shaking their fists when all of us were getting all excited about it. But what are your thoughts on Apple Pay?
Well, Apple, I mean, I get that a lot of Android users are like, wait a second, we've had this for a while now. But Apple used its clout to make deals with banks, you know, credit card providers and retailers, and make Apple Pay happen. And that benefits anybody who's got an NFC, you know, payment system in their smartphone too, because this is not new technology, nor did Apple really say it was new technology. It's sort of existing technology, but this is Apple, right? It's using its clout. It's popularizing something that was maybe a little too techy. They're tying it in with Touch ID, which is a smart thing to sort of send the message that you need to be present. It's not like somebody could steal your phone and use it as a credit card. They need you to be there with your thumbprint.
Right.
That's a good sign. So, you know, it's easy to use. It's fun. And it opens up the contactless payment world to everybody, because this is the right time. I mean, this is the other thing about Apple is sometimes they choose the right time. And here in the U.S., we're changing the way we pay for things with credit cards in 2015. They're going to be doing not necessarily chip and PIN, but chipped cards are coming. And so a lot of hardware is being updated for 2015. So
in fact, there's like a mandatory cutoff date of October.
Yeah, the credit card companies are going to be like, forget it. This is it.
Yeah.
You're going to do it. And whether it's a chip and sign or chip and PIN, they're going to be chips in the cards. And what that means is this is the perfect time to come out with something like Apple Pay, because now is the time when everybody's going to be rolling over their systems. They're probably going to buy systems, you know, credit card readers and things in retail that have NFC built in.
Right.
And also the existence of Apple Pay and people being interested in it makes it more likely that more retailers are going to go, all right, we'll pay the extra money for the NFC thing because we're going to have all these Apple people coming in wanting to pay. So it's good timing, whereas Google's timing was a little too soon. The hardware was younger. It wasn't as efficient or effective. I mean, I tried some NFC payment systems, and they were wonky and weird and didn't work. And now the technology's matured a little bit, and Apple's timing it right. But like I said, everybody's going to benefit from that. Anybody who's got an Android phone, this rollout's going to help them too, because Apple's going to have helped push this same technology into a bunch of places it wasn't before. Just not Walmart, right? Walmart
They're
is afraid
using
of this.
Their own. Yeah, that's.
But I, in the end, I think consumers are going to love this technology, whether it's from Apple or somebody else, and it's going to be a popular way to pay for things. So
you know, you mentioned earlier in the show that you know this sort of Steve Jobs legacy and Steve Jobs himself saying, "Listen, Tim Cook, you're going to take over the company. I don't want you always to think about what I would do because you're moving forward."
Right.
Does this seem like, because Tim Tim Cook was so much a, you know, he was supply chain operations.
Right.
He knows how to make money. Does this seem like a Tim Cook decision to you? Like, let's introduce the Apple Pay scenario just ahead of when people are going to be thinking of it anyway, so it doesn't suffer the same fate as Google Wallet, where people say, I don't know, it's a little technical.
I don't know if this is, if I would say this is directly Tim Cook. I mean, obviously him standing on stage in September and saying, this is a major product announcement for us. This isn't a thing on the side. Apple Pay is a huge initiative for Apple.
Right.
That's a big deal. It's interesting in the sense that I think this expertise is the kind of, this is the iTunes Apple. This is the Apple that made deals with record companies and set up iTunes and made it the first really successful online music store. It's more that Apple than it is the other, you know, hardware and software part. That said, Steve Jobs was involved in both. So I don't know if I would say that this is right in Tim Cook's wheelhouse, but he obviously saw how all these pieces are interconnected and said, this is big. We need to push hard here. We need to do this all the way and not just say, you know, it's an aside, to really say this is a huge thing for our company to do this. And, you know, there's a big financial upside for them because they're now involved in more financial transactions, and that's good for Apple.
Absolutely. So we've got some emerging software markets, certainly some emerging product categories for Apple. What about more of the mature category, say the iPad, which was so new just a few short years ago and has now, at least when you look at research from a variety of analytics firms, the tablet industry growth is slowing.
Yeah, it's almost flat. iPad sales are almost flat year over year.
Which doesn't mean that they're not selling them. It just means that they're not gaining in selling speed.
I think it's a little bit like, remember when everybody bought an HD TV, right? Like suddenly everybody bought an HD TV in a matter of like 5 years.
Yeah.
Everybody's TV in America turned over in the world. Like everybody bought one. And then if you had in the middle of that said, well, let's plot the growth here, it's going to be huge forever, you would have been wrong because it was going to flatten out. I kind of feel like that's what happened with tablets, is there was this initial burst of like, yay, tablets are here. They're really cool. And now we're in a replacement cycle. So everybody who looked at those first couple of years of the iPad said, oh my God, this is going to be huge. It's going to be bigger than the iPhone. And the truth is, it's not. It's an additive thing. It's a cool product category. I don't think it's dead. I don't think it's dying. But I think it's going to grow much more slowly. And also, let's be honest, some of the software, you know, I still use a laptop to get my job done. I can't I can't do that level of productivity on an iPad.
It's not a total replacement.
And the new, you know, the iPad Air 2 is an incredibly powerful piece of hardware, but the software still struggles to keep up because, you know, using a touch interface and the apps are not necessarily as sophisticated as the desktop apps that we're used to. That all has to catch up. So I think the tablet market still has a bright future ahead, but I think we got ahead of ourselves. And clearly it's going to be more like a PC market where people are going to hold on to these things for years and not replace them like they replace a subsidized phone every 2 years.
Right. You know, Leo and I were looking at older episodes of iPad Today from the beginning of this year and saying, well, we were talking about a large iPad Pro then, and we're talking about
still
it
talking
now.
About it, yeah.
And we've never seen one. There are persistent rumors that there will be a larger iPad at some point in the future. And I think part of that is because nobody can figure out how else it would change. Can't really get that much thinner.
Well, it comes back to it, right? Like they've got the ability to make the hardware. This is the story with the iPad. Apple can make this amazing hardware. And then there's the software question. And I think Apple's software side, just in general, and we can see this on the Mac too, they've struggled. They've struggled to keep up with the pace that the hardware side has set.
Yeah.
And for something like a bigger iPad, you could argue the existing iPad needs more software love than not just on the third-party app side, but from Apple, than it's really been given. It hasn't really progressed. The home screen is still that big home screen with the apps spaced out. I mean, it is a little too iPhone-y even now. And so I think that's the question with something like a bigger iPad is, for that thing to work, it's got to behave differently from the current iPads. And, you know, do they have the time to do that? Are they thinking about that? Are they going to make changes to iOS that make the iPad experience dramatically different from the iPhone experience? Because right now, they're not that dramatically different. And I kind of feel like to unleash what the potential of the iPad is in all its sizes, it needs to get a little bit of space between it and the iPhone. If it is just a bigger iPhone, which is always the knock on the iPad. But you know, if it only is linked to what the iPhone progression is, that, I think, hurts it because it's not taking advantage of all the things that come with a bigger, more powerful device. And the big iPad, the iPad Pro or whatever it might be, even more so, right? Because you got to do something. You can't just have really huge apps, right?
I know. You figure, what is it going to more resemble a newspaper page? I mean, I'm not exactly sure. You know, in fact, that was kind of going to be my next question because you actually left Macworld this year,
but
obviously involved in print for a really long time. Coming from that sort of, okay, this is how things are laid out. This is how people like to read. These are the sorts of visuals that you need to accompany something. How do you think something like the iPad changed the industry, the one that you've worked in for so long?
I don't know. I mean, there was so much change. I think going from dead trees to the internet was probably the biggest change.
Sure.
And it didn't matter whether that was on a laptop or a desktop or a tablet or a phone. That was just a complete sea change in how we process information.
Mm-hmm.
I think the magazine industry has really been sort of a disappointment on the iPad. And part of that is down to Apple deciding to make all magazines build their own apps instead of creating the equivalent of iBooks for magazines.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have been a very different approach and it might have been more successful. But that's not... Steve Jobs saw those demos of those really amazing, you know, demo apps that Adobe put together and, you know, the Wired put together and said, this is great, let's do that. And I think we're still paying for that now where... The newsstand is not very good and the apps in it are limited to people spending
a lot of money
to build apps. So, you know, I think a bigger iPad is going to be more of a creation device, though, than a reader. I feel like the beauty of having a bigger iPad is to use that for making stuff. But you've got to have the apps and the software there to be productive, or it is just, it's like those checks they give away at charity events. It's just like a really big check. Why do I need this oversized check? That's the risk that a big iPad has. Like, why is this so large? It doesn't do anything. So that's the question is, you know, what can I do on it? Yeah, you could read a book on that huge, you know, oh, it's a huge book, but I wouldn't
I don't know anybody who's asking for that.
No. So it's probably not that, but I mean, you mentioned the magazines going away. I wish everybody hoped that that things like the iPad would be a solution to that. And I think the Apple could have handled that better, but it's turned out to not be, because I even have subscriptions on my iPad and I never even remember to download them. They're in the newsstand. So
I have the same problem.
It's just, you know, it's just kind of a failure. It's too bad.
Then you kind of have the retro movement, CNET publishing a magazine.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, I don't know, does quarterly print make more sense for some of these brands?
So print's not dead, but print is very different than it used to be. And it will be dead eventually. But the old print model of, like, we can print a lot of copies and we can get big advertising and it's totally worth it, that is falling by the wayside. But there was always a high-end print magazine market, and it's still there, where it's really high quality and it's reaching a very specific, interesting audience, and they don't print too many copies, and the advertisers are really happy because they've worked very closely with the publisher. And there's room for that. I don't know for how long, but I assume that's what the CNET magazine is going to be, is a really kind of high gloss, working very closely with the advertisers to make sure it fits what they're trying to get out of it. But, you know, so I think really small, targeted, focused magazines still have a little bit of a future. But in the end, the magazine audience is aging, and at some point nobody's going to want to reach them anymore. And that'll be the end of that medium.
Speaking of media, we've got not only reading, but obviously music. Apple's still kind of trying to figure out its music strategy going forward. Obviously, iTunes is... well, a little long in the tooth, but iTunes now offers quite a few things that it didn't used to. You've got, you know, Apple and Amazon and Google and pretty much any large company trying to figure out how it wins content. Do you think Apple has any leg up? Because it has shown in the past that it doesn't necessarily, just because it can make things look pretty, it isn't necessarily the place that everyone's going to go the next time they want to download the first season of The Sopranos.
Right. I buy some stuff on iTunes because it's convenient.
Mm.
And Apple has this advantage of the fact that most of its competitors, its stuff's only available on its platforms, but its competitors make their stuff available on Apple's platforms. So you can be, like, most of the books I buy are Kindle books, and they read just great on Apple platforms. You can buy or rent a movie through Google Play and watch it on an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
You can download it. You can buy it and download it and watch it on your iPad using the Google Play Movies app on the iPad. So, you know, Apple's existence as the platform owner isn't enough.
Yeah.
It's not bad that they're the platform owner, but it's not enough. I think everybody's struggling with media stuff, though, because there's so many, you know, tech companies are used to just saying, waving their hand and saying, let's do this now. And what we're finding with, like, Apple trying to do a TV product, it's like the TV networks, the studios, the content owners, and the companies that are traditionally in the content business, they're really wary of tech companies kind of coming in and ruining everything and blowing up their business model. And so, you know, the pace of innovation just stalls out when you reach those guys because they are afraid and they have, you know, they've got the keys to the car. So I think that's one of the problems with a lot of this media stuff is not that the technology isn't there to transform it. It's that the people who are making the content, the places where you're seeing transformation is where there are people willing to make content in the new forms, like on the web, where people rushed to go on the web, even though the magazine owners didn't, other people did, and that solved it. But boy, you know, it's harder when it's movie studios or TV studios.
Absolutely.
You gotta crack those guys, and they're really afraid because they saw what happened with music, that they felt like the perception was that Apple took advantage of the music industry. I think Apple maybe helped save the music industry for a while there.
Yeah.
But they're afraid that somebody from the tech industry is now telling them how to run their industry, and that terrifies them.
Well, thank goodness for podcasting, right?
That's right.
You and me.
We are getting around all of those problems.
Emerging industries happening right before
your eyes. That's where you see the interesting stuff is when you don't have these entrenched companies that are afraid that their whole business is going to blow up if they take advantage. But if you wait long enough, if you're one of those companies, then you're out of luck because everybody else has gotten the leg up.
Absolutely. Jason Snell, thank you so much for joining us on this special episode of TN2, all Apple focused. I can think of no one I would rather have here. Jason writes at sixcolors.com, which is an homage to the early days of
Apple. It's not all Apple stuff, but it's a lot of Apple stuff on there. So
it's great.
It
it's absolutely great. Sixcolors.com, SIXCOLORS.com. And of course, Jason is a frequent guest and contributor on MacBreak Weekly and also Twit, This Week in Tech, which, of course, you might have heard of. It's kind of a big deal around these parts. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks to all of you for being here for this special edition of Tech News Tonight. You can, of course, subscribe to the show if, you know, you want to do the podcast thing and you can't or don't want to watch live. twit.tv/TN2 is where you do that. You can write us with feedback at tn2@twit.tv. And, of course, you can watch live weekdays at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time. I'm Sarah Lane, and thanks for watching.
Bandwidth for Tech News Tonight is brought to you by CashFly.com.